Good morning. Welcome to church this morning. My name is Peg Flack. I've served this church for 2 terms on the board, director of religious education, collector of ghost stories, as well as other random acts of volunteerism, and I've been a member here since 1988. We welcome Sabrina Tupola to the pulpit this morning. She will be speaking on the topic, Where I'm From. Everyone's invited to stay following this worship service for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, just through the doors behind me. If you're a newcomer here, we extend you a special welcome and invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your hymnal and put it in the offering plate, or give it to an usher. We'll send you a copy of our church newsletter for the next 3 months and let you know about the programs and activities going on here at church. If you have children with you, they are invited to attend our religious education program during the service, and when the children leave for classes later in the service, they are welcome to join. We do have a professionally staffed nursery for infants and young children. Adults are encouraged to attend the adult religious education programming at 11:50. If you would like to learn more about this church and Unitarian Universalism, there is an information racket right behind me in the room, and other information that you're certainly welcome to take home with you. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. And now I invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet.
She's smacking.
And now the announcements. We have one announcement from the pulpit. Mona Hebert has an announcement that SLU's Battle of the Boots will be starting soon, and as you clean out your closets, please bring in all boots, slippers, shoes, etc. Only requirement is they have no holes in the soles and must be pairs, no single shoes. Thanks. We begin our service this morning with a prelude. To worship is number 418. No?
Okay.
I need a hymnal. Oh, it's not a joined reading, that's why. Come into the circle of love and justice. Come into the community of mercy, holiness, and health. Come, and you shall know peace and joy. Ben Heft lights our chalice today. We light our chalice this morning, grateful for the love that we experience in this beloved community. May the flame light the way for all who seek such abundance. Our opening hymn is number 85, Although This Life Is But a Wrath.
And Rachel is going to play the first thing around, and then we can join in. For the intergenerational story. And I will not call up Isabella because she helped me pick a story and she helped me translate it. This is a story from a book of stories that little kids wrote up of my hometown of Palermo. It's in Italian, so she wrote a translation. And it's about little myths about little roads. This one, I need to open this. Can you open this? Show the pictures. This one is called The Legend of Via Bambinai. It's here. Okay, you can show the pictures. You want to read it? Okay, once upon a time, in a city called Palermo, lived many families. Like all kids, the kids there liked playing in the streets. One day, they found a long road covered in fog. The oldest of the group decided to run along the road to find where it went. So everyone followed him. At the end of the road, they found many little paths, and they took one of the paths and found out that behind them there was nothing. And at one point, they thought that they were going to vanish in there was some fog. That's sorry. And at one point, they thought they too were going to vanish in the fog, but they went on. Then they got to the end of the path, and there were stairs leading to a wax castle. And there was a sweet music, and they found out the road wasn't disappearing anymore. So they followed the music that led into a big room, and there was a good fairy, made out of wax too, with well-dressed porcelain dolls around her. And the fairy said she would protect them from disappearing. Meanwhile, the place where the children played was deserted. And their parents, the parents of these children, went to look for them. But the road where they had gone was gone. Months passed, and the parents couldn't find them. Then, on Christmas Day, the castle appeared, and the parents went in. And they saw the children were safe, and they were playing with the dolls. The parents were very grateful to the fairy. Then the fairy decided to transform the mysterious road and the castle into a festive road with presents every Christmas. And even now, that road still exists. The end.
We'll now bless the children and send them to their activities. I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any gratitudes or celebrations you bring with you to church this morning. There will be time to share concerns and sorrows in a few moments.
Hello, I'm Casey Luker. I just wanted to say we made it through the holidays. I'm so grateful to be here on this cold day and kind of get things going again. Jennifer Lewis and I went to see the Bald Eagle at the Visitor Center yesterday, which was really cool. And I got actually this coupon for a free meal at the Brew House in Grafton that's only good for today. So if anybody wants it, just come find me. So I'm grateful for all of you, and I have a present if you'd like to come find me.
My husband and I have found out, first of all, we knew for a couple of months, but we're finally going to be grandparents. And we just found out it's a little girl. Okay. Unfortunately, my daughter is having a lot of problems with morning sickness and migraines and everything else. So she's not eating like she should be, so the baby's a little bit underweight. So I just want to ask for everybody's thoughts and prayers that my daughter will start feeling better so she can start eating for two. But we're looking forward to the birth of our first grandchild, our daughter, in the middle of May.
I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any sorrows or concerns you bring to church with you this morning.
Most of you know from Facebook or whatever that my niece passed away recently, and this niece is one that has had a lot of troubles in her life, and she had been sick for a while with a MRSA infection in a knee, hip implant that she had. And so that had been, you know, her last month or so trying to get over that. And then all of a sudden, she got really, really sick, and it ended up that it was a blood clot, which went to, you know, and killed her, and it was just very instant. She lived with my sister for a long time, and my sister is really having a very hard time she had gotten even closer than a mother would normally to her daughter, you know, who lived with her. And my daughter left a 16-year-old son who's also having a very, very hard time with the loss of his mother. So please keep your thoughts and prayers with my sister and my niece's son, my great-nephew, and you know, help them get through this hard, really hard time, and hope that 2015 will be a better year for them eventually. Thank you.
May the gratitudes and celebrations among us this day become a blessing to all, and may all the concerns and sorrows of each be carried in our hearts. A burden shared becomes a load lightened. And now we have the offering to support the work of this church. Let there be an offering to sustain and strengthen this place, which is sacred to so many of us. This morning's offering will be gratefully received. May it be joyfully given. After me, the offering blessing. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings.
Hello, everybody. Good morning. Here we are, a new day for Sunday of the new year. Happy New Year. Let's take a moment in this sacred space to make room for some silence. Let's take a breath and be aware of our thoughts coming in and out of our minds. Let them go. Breathe in and out. As you keep breathing, slowly come back to this room. And as you come out of the silence, let us think of the week ahead, and let's be thankful for the opportunity to gather here today. Let us offer ourselves a blessing for the coming days. May we remember the quiet of this moment, of this sacred space, and maybe we able to access it as needed again and again in the coming week. Amen. The next hymn is number 1002 in the Teal Hymnal, Comfort Me. We've done it once before, I believe, but Rachel's going to go through it once, and then we're going to try our best, okay? Reading today from a book that everybody is made to read in high school where I come from. It's called The Leopard. It's set during the annexation of Sicily to the new formed Kingdom of Italy in 1860. Italy is not that old. I mean, parts of it are ancient, but the unification is only 150 years old. Sicily used to be part of the reign of Spain before unification. In the scene that I'm reading from, which is a very long one, and I wanted to translate the whole thing, but it just, there is not enough time. I'm gonna give you two snippets. The protagonist, Prince Fabrice, a nobleman from the old guard, from the Spanish, has been talking to Chevalier, the northerner that has been sent by the King of Italy to offer this old guard nobleman a seat in the Senate of the newly formed National Parliament. Prince Fabrice is reluctant to accept, as he does not understand how this should work and how things would be any different and better under this new regime than they had been in the past. He has been bemoaning that the North has already done things without asking in Sicily, things he is not sure were well done, and now
after all is said and done, they're asking him to be a senator, to rubber stamp the actions of these new conquerors. So he says, "We are old, Chevalier," and he's talking about the whole island, not just himself. "We are ancient. For the last 25 centuries, we have borne the weight of these magnificent heterogeneous civilizations. They all came from somewhere else already fully formed. We didn't create them. None of them sprung from us. We are as white as you are, Chevalier, as white as the Queen of England, and yet, for the last 2,500 years, we've been a colony. Don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining. All this is in great part our fault, but we are all tired now." After a while, continues, "I admit that some Sicilians, if they leave the island, could overcome their fatalistic tendencies. But they must leave when they're very young. Leaving after 20 is already too late. They will have formed a crust and a belief that their country of origin is normal and places abroad are strange." How shall we live our lives then? I'm going to tell you a story in three vignettes. An August afternoon in Sicily, a lifetime ago, I'm sitting on a porch swing, sipping iced tea, talking to my friend about what? Probably boys or music and boys. We're in high school. What else do we have to talk about, really? I remember the palm trees overhead, the sweet and salty smell of the beach not that far away, the lemony taste of the tea, an easy afternoon like many others. Did I walk home? Did my mom pick me up? Did I stay for dinner? I don't remember. What I do remember, though, is another morning. I remember the news from the radio. My friend's dad, a forensic pathologist, was shot by a mafia assassin who had not appreciated the honest opinion that this father of three, a respected doctor in the community, had given in regards to some fingerprints. Paolo Giacone, August 11th, 1982. Oops. We eat dinner late in Sicily, like 9:30, 10 o'clock late. My family used to enjoy eating outside on the patio, especially in those days before air conditioning was everywhere. We would take advantage of the evening's breeze. The news came shortly after dinner. None of us personally knew General Della Chiesa or his wife, but there had been great hope that this excellent and multi-decorated military man who was able to defeat the terrorist group, the Red Brigades, could help with the latest outbreak of violence that targeted the magistrates and police investigating Cosa Nostra. Instead, on this night, late summer evening, he had been gunned down by a band of thugs with AK-47s on his way to a restaurant. A few days following their murder, a peaceful candle-lit march was organized. On a wall near the place where the general, his wife, and their bodyguard had died, someone had written, "Here dies the hope of all honest citizens of Palermo." Carlo Alberto Dalla Chiesa, Emanuela Setti Carraro, and Domenico Russo, September 3rd, 1982. "My dad picks me up at the airport. We have to go through there," he says. "From the car window, I see a lunar landscape pass me by. That's where the highway used to be. Now it's all broken bits of road, rocks, red dust. It is late spring of 1992, and a few days before my arrival on this same stretch of highway, a half ton of explosive was placed in a culvert below and detonated. As Giovanni Falcone, the most successful prosecuting magistrate who had been fighting the mafia, his wife, and three police officers were passing over it. They say he did not die immediately. Overwhelmed by the magnitude of the hole in the ground and by what had happened, I try to look away, but there is nowhere else to look. Giovanni Falcone, Francesca Morvillo, Rocco Di Cillo, Antonio Montinaro, and Vito Schifani, 23 May, 1992. So I grew up in Palermo, Sicily, and during what one would call my formative years, a period of about 8 to 10, the number of murders committed by the mafia was over 60. This is the number of law-abiding, innocent men, women, and yes, children too, who were killed. If we include the mafia wars proper, where the crime families killed each other, then the total would be over 200. My family knew a few of the magistrates, policemen, lawmakers, and clergy murdered, either personally or through family members. And even those we did not know directly, someone we knew probably worked with a relative, went to school with a child, had a cousin. Palermo is not that big. I mean, it's big, but yeah. And you do get to know who the actors are on the other side, too. Maybe not personally, but you know. But more than knowing the people in the mafia, you see what they do. You see their actions. As I grew up, it seemed to me that in Sicily, because of the diffuse actions of organized crime, we were deprived of what other people, say, in Sweden or northern Italy or here, don't even have to think twice about. Like what? Like having the trash removed on a reliable basis. Like being able to get a job on your own merits. Right and wrong can start looking like distant concepts. And in all that distance, they may appear blurred. Moral ambiguity was surrounding me like a dense fog, and I was having a hard time seeing the road ahead. Of course, the people, we were fed up. We marched in the streets. Some of us hung sheets from their windows with writing that said, basta, enough. But to my impressionable young mind, it did not seem enough. I thought, if all good people in the end get bested by organized crime, marching is not really helping anyone. Especially not those who are dead. When the opportunity came for me to study abroad, I took it largely for the chance to learn more and better things. But I can't lie, there was also a welcome sense of starting over in a place where maybe things aren't so systemically bad. I really wanted nothing to do with my native land. However, I had not considered the other side of leaving a place, which is arriving at another place where you are the new person. A person from far away is always interesting, and their presence raises many questions. These questions are always well-intentioned, well-meaning, asked by friendly, nice people. But then they inevitably end up going in the same place. Where are you from? At this point, I always experience an internal struggle between the part of me who knows where this is headed and which wants nothing to do with the conversation, and the part of me that can't lie. Where am I from? Well, the voice inside me says, Armenia. Let's try Armenia this time. Quebec, that's possible. We almost sound French-Canadian. Come on, this one time, what are they gonna know? Lie! But I always end up replying, I'm from Italy. And if I'm lucky, this ends here. If I am not lucky, my new friend will say, ah, Italy, where in Italy? Half of myself will say Florence. They're not gonna know. It's a beautiful place. Come on, this one time. And again, I can't lie. So I end up saying, I'm from Palermo, Sicily, while I brace myself for the inevitable follow-up. Ah, Sicily, do you know anybody in the mafia? This question arrives possibly 4 out of 5 times. And by the way, I'm not blaming the asker. It's all on me. Because despite having heard it many, many, many times, I really still don't know what to say. And in part, my reluctance is due to having to explain away some stereotype that has been Hollywood sanctioned. So, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie is a Nigerian author and a MacArthur Genius Grant holder. And you may know her because if you like Beyoncé, her words have been sampled in the song Flawless. And she has numerous TED Talks, and one of them out there is called The Danger of a Single Story. And she said this quote that I think perfectly encapsulates how I feel. She says, the problem with stereotypes is not that they're untrue, but that they are incomplete. They make one story become the only story. So we all know what we're talking about. In my case, we're talking about, you know, Marlon Brando or Al Pacino or Robert De Niro, heck, Joe Pesci. We already have this idea of power and glamour and fascination. And so I'm pretty sure that this is what most people want to ask me when they want to know if I know someone, some of them. Well, I don't know anybody personally. I've never actually had even an acquaintance with them. But I've seen them. I've seen mafia bosses. And you can see them too on YouTube. And they have none of the projected allure and power of these characters in the movies. I did see these criminals during the Mafia Maxi trial in the 1980s. My mom took me to it. And it's on YouTube. All of those I've seen were behind bars, and they looked like ordinary old people. The mafia was never about honor or loyalty or family, or least of all, about caring for others. Ever since the beginning, it has always been at best about protection racketeering. At worst, well, it is about corrupting the power of the law and blowing up people in highways. All of these men behind bars that I saw had been in hiding 20, 30, or 40 years before being captured, because no one can lead a normal life when one is the head of a crime family. Even a normal life is portrayed in the movies, even Goodfellas. So they look ordinary and at the same time scary. That's it. That's what you see. To be honest, when I get the inevitable mafia question, I often hesitate also because I do want to change the stereotype. I do not want to fall in those. I want to say this is not me. This is not the majority of people I know. Please don't define us by one bad trait that you happen to know about. Try to understand my heritage is way more complex than that. And if the mafia is all you can think of us, then try to forgive my provenance. See me as just another person. Life is beautiful and it's ugly, and it's different and it's the same everywhere. That is what I would like to say, but haven't quite been able to up until now. And I'm a little bit more than just a little bit. I'm quite disappointed with myself for all these years of looking away or trying to look away. I wish I could have been braver and more proud of my heritage. I wish I would have answered better. I wish I could have contributed more to show the good and not the bad. I've chosen a topic today that it's still difficult for me to discuss. And I've chosen it because I think it might be useful. You see, I've been thinking about the parallels between the situation I've lived in Sicily in my youth and some of the things happening here in Ferguson, New York, in the United States. Like how hard it is to overcome stereotypes. Like how systemic racism and organized crime are things that can pervade one's entire existence without one realizing how much they have taken over one's life. Like the fact that people somehow always have to die in the struggle for freedom from something deeply rooted. Like how when you start organizing for change, difficult and unpleasant things start happening, but they also open up possibilities. It's a different world, but I wanted to offer maybe a positive point of view. I wanted to say it gets better and use my experience to shed light and perhaps offer hope. So I was looking for an angle, but for a while I couldn't find anything. It all felt hollow. It's not so much that I was being insincere. It's that I had some feeling of unease, and it kept creeping up while I was writing or thinking about all this. I just couldn't put my hands around it. It was some sort of an existential fear. Like when you wake from a nightmare, but you can't remember what the nightmare was about, something like that. It was as if I was afraid of finding the right words. Carl Jung describes the shadow as the part of our personality unknown and perhaps unwanted by our conscious selves. At the individual level, it often contains what we would call our dark side. The example that is always given about the personal shadow is meeting someone and thinking, oh, I can't stand them, even though we don't know them very well. That is an indication that at some point, at some unconscious level, we have seen our shadow projected onto them and we reject it after we recognize. And so we end up rejecting the person. But for our mental well-being, and to gain a sense of wholeness, we must look at our shadow. There is an aspect of creativity inside the shadow too. Letting the shadow come out into the light might also bring out these creative forces. And besides, shining a light on the shadow helps to make the world a little bit brighter, or so they say. But wait, there is more. The shadow extends also to the collective unconscious. Taken collectively, the shadow is that part of humanity or a community that makes us otherize the other, that makes us take sides, that makes us intolerant and fixed in our beliefs, us against them. And humanity or society or community needs to confront their shadow too and bring it out so that the real transformation can happen. Somehow, thinking about it, this resonated with me. I see now what's hard for me to say. The reason I feel disappointed with and unable to speak of where I come from. Because being from the same place as many of the criminals I've discussed, I've been afraid to look inside me to see if I shared any commonality and if I shared any of that dark side with that group that does something so reprehensible. I am not them. So I distanced myself from it. I looked away without looking back or in word, because the thought that I could be made of the same material as them was unbearable. But here's the thing. Any transformation that I could have had or I could have helped initiate, any hope of change comes from looking at our shadow. By turning away from looking at my own and at the shadow of where I'm from, I closed off the possibility of doing something. What I'd been missing from my reasoning was the element of choice. Yes, we all have a shadow. We're all potentially both good and bad. It doesn't mean that we're all destined to be criminals or we're all angels. I can choose to commit unspeakable crimes, or I can say, enough. I can revel in the carefully crafted cocoon of my privilege, or I can be an ally. I have this ability, and so does everybody else. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, cowardice asks the question, is it safe? Expediency asks the question, is it politic? Vanity asks the question, is it popular? But conscience asks the question, is it right? And there comes a time when one must take a position that it's neither safe nor politic nor popular, but one must take it because one's conscience tells one that it is right. And it follows that when the conscience speaks, change is possible. Now I understand this and I offer it as a possibility. We can all choose to change things, no matter where we're from or the history. When we choose to look, when we choose to help, when we choose according to our conscience, we must choose, and we must choose every day, day after day after day. That is what makes change happen. It's been more than 30 years since my friend's dad died. It's been more than 20 years since the half ton of explosive was detonated on the highway. It has been 8 years since they captured the guy who ordered most of these murders. So how are things today in Sicily? I wish I could give a glowing report and say it's all well and the mafia is gone. It is not. Change never happens at the expected speed. And yet, I see many signs that changes that are taking root today that started back in the 80s with the peaceful marching, in the 90s with the sheets on the windows that said enough. The mindset of people, especially those younger than me, is changing. That's huge. And this mindset is giving life, this new different mindset is giving life to new creative ways of fighting protection racketeering, narco-trafficking, and other ills of society. Not perfect, but ongoing. Change is not only possible, but it is happening. I want to close today with the words of a priest, Father Pino Puglisi, yet another victim of the mafia whose conscience told him to say what he knew was right. His words. We want to be able to say, since there is nothing here, we roll up our sleeves and do something. And if each of us does something, a lot will get done. May it be so. Okay. The last hymn is number 170. Over there, we're gentle, angry people. Please rise as you're willing and able.
Thank you.
benediction in the word of Paul Robeson. Sorrow will one day turn to joy. All that breaks the heart and oppresses the soul will one day give peace, place to peace and understanding, and everyone will be free. Amen.